At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Eye on the Tigers podcast. My name is Eli Hoff, and I'm the Mizzou sports beat writer for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STLtoday.com. What a night Wednesday was inside Mizzou Arena. Number 15, Missouri beats number 4, Alabama in a track meet. 110-96, the final score. Alabama coach Nate Oates smashed a whiteboard. Mark Mitchell for Missouri scored 31 points, a career high. And a fire broke out in an arena suite after the game. Can't say I have seen a night like it. We'll talk about Wednesday night against Alabama. We'll talk about more things to like with this Mizzou team. And we'll discuss the path to a double bye in the SEC tournament on this week's show. But I want to start here as a preface for this episode, and frankly for just what the next month and a couple weeks potentially is going to look like for this team, for watching this team, etc. It's clear now. Today is Thursday, February 20th, and this was clear last night around 10:30 p.m. Central Time. This Missouri team is special. I wrote in the Post-Dispatch for this morning that they are going somewhere. That somewhere very well could be deep into March, maybe even deep into the heart of Texas for the Final Four played in San Antonio. It's very hard to argue that the ceiling is could not be that high. It is a possibility. Maybe that materializes, maybe it doesn't. But I want to start with this by just saying I assume most of you listening are Mizzou fans, and I hope that you are enjoying this. I don't want to go on some soapbox here to tell you how to be a fan. We all have our own things as sports fans. Some people are in this for the negativity. That's fine. But I hope you are having fun. I really, really do. Because the reality is that seasons like this one don't come along often. And I'm not really talking about the winning. Like, I don't want that to be Missouri teams don't win, right? And a lot of you, if you're in Missouri, are probably to some degree fans of the Kansas City Chiefs. You know what it's like to win and win and win, recently at least. But I mean, a season like this that nobody, by which I mean very, very few, but really nobody saw it coming. Probably not even most of you. Like, if you can sit here and say you saw this coming, kudos to you. I hope you are being honest with yourself and saying that. I will admit I did not see this season coming, and I think I am in the vast, vast majority in that. Missouri is the surprise team of this season on a national level. There is national attention for the degree to which this came out of nowhere. This season is playing out in the best possible way after last season played out in the worst possible way. That's part of what I think just should make this so fun. It's been fun for me just in the last 12, 14 hours since that game ended to see comments from people saying they've been Mizzou fans for 30, 40, 50 years and that Wednesday's game was the most entertaining one they've been to or watched, that this team is the most fun team they've watched. That's really, really cool. So I don't want to litigate whether this team is more fun or better than 2012 or 1988, 89 or any other given season. We get too caught up in those comparisons. This should be fun. You've got likable protagonists. Mizzou players are having fun. You see them after all these games. They do the SEC Network post-game interview and they're making the shush sign to the camera. They're having fun. It should be fun. The environment at Mizzou Arena on Wednesday was as good of a one as I've seen in that building. The bar in my eyes, and I don't pretend to have been around for a while, so some of you are going to listen to this and say, well, you should have seen it in 2012 or something like that. And that's valid. I'm not going to argue with you on that. But the bar for me was what the environment had been against Kansas this year, especially as that game went down the stretch and it became clear that Mizzou was not just capable of winning, but going to actually win that game, right? That was a crazed crowd, I think is the word I would use for that, right? There was, you know, the intensity of the rivalry and just the craziness with this. On Wednesday, Mizzou Arena seemed hostile. And I don't even know if that's really the right word for it. If you were there in the building, maybe you are also struggling to figure out what exactly it was that made that different. But it was a crowd that was often on its feet, and not just to start the game. Mizzou scored 32 seconds into the game, and the crowd stayed on their feet. Every single person, rafters, lower level, student section, all of it, crowd stayed on their feet. Right, other points they're up. Mizzou got a standing ovation leaving the court headed into halftime there. That's part of it. There was engagement on every single possession. One of the things you'll hear some of these SEC coaches talk about is that in this league, so many of the games feel like every single possession matters, even if it's just, you know, a random half court set with 13 minutes to go in the first half. There was so much intensity going into every possession. It gave the game so much life, and some of that, maybe in a weird way, is owed to Alabama and Nate Oates and the general disdain for him and that program. He certainly fed into it, smashing up his whiteboard to earn a technical in the first half there. But there was something about this. The student section was darn near full an hour before the game. It's an 8 p.m. tip off. Wind chills, I have to imagine, below zero. If not, it sure felt like it. Snow earlier in the week and still a very packed crowd in there. That to me was it was almost as impressive a showing from the fans as it was from the team on the court. And I don't say that as a way to glaze up Mizzou fans or anything like that. It just I was taken aback by the atmosphere there. That felt like a big time college basketball game. And a lot of that is owed to the players on the court, right? They played a fantastic game, scored a whole lot of points. What, 208? No, 18? A whole lot of points scored in that game. 208 points scored in that game between both teams. Some runs in there, et cetera. It was entertaining basketball. But again, I think it was the crowd that really made that. I heard from folks who were watching it on TV that came through on the TV broadcast with some of the visuals there and the noise. Just an incredible scene on Wednesday. Like I said, haven't really seen anything like it. Maybe you've been around long enough to have seen something like that here at Missouri, but new experience for me. Of course, new experience for these Mizzou players, and I think enough folks to make that worth it. I want to give a side note on that. I mentioned Nate Oates picking up his technical there for smashing the whiteboard. I think my favorite part of that moment was something that I don't know if the TV cameras picked up on, or I don't know if really that many people in the crowd actually noticed. I didn't actually see Nate Oates slam or kick or bring the whiteboard to the floor and break it. I saw that on the TV replay later. What I saw in real time was him yelling and Mizzou center Josh Gray coming over, walking over and making that universal T sign towards Nate Oates, like as Nate Oates is getting teed up, which I thought was funny itself. And then Josh Gray, who is 7 feet tall, reaches down, picks up a piece of the whiteboard, and hands it to an Alabama assistant coach with a four-letter word-eating grin on his face. And that to me was just very funny, because that tells me that Josh Gray, who has spent many years in the SEC going up against Alabama teams when he was at LSU and then South Carolina, that he enjoyed that moment probably as much as anybody else in that arena. Again, small thing, but very, very funny there. And just taking out the sideshow or the environment or anything like that, it's tough to know where we start with that game. I think we should actually go back a game to this weekend. Mizzou went down to Athens, Georgia, beat the Bulldogs 87-74 there. That was a very back and forth game in the first half. Then Mizzou took care of business in the second half, put together a 15-0 run at one point. We'll come back to that in a little bit on the show. Big second half there. Tamar Bates and Mark Mitchell, 13 and 14 points respectively. Ant Robinson officially broke his slump. He had 15 points, 7 assists, 5 rebounds, 4 steals, and not a single turnover. Although he did foul out in that game. Good performance, taking care of business against a team that was certainly on the brink of desperation, if not there yet, in the form of the Georgia Bulldogs. The I think the lasting perhaps image of that game was the score bug when the game started. It said Georgia 1, Missouri 0 as it was tipping off. That's because Mizzou submitted the wrong starting lineup before the game. Had Peyton Marshall starting for Mark Mitchell in the lineup, which would have been a very surprising decision if it had stood. It did not stand, and so changing up the starting lineup after it's been submitted incurs an administrative technical foul that was assigned to Missouri. Dennis Gates did take responsibility for this. He apologized on Twitter after the game, said he's responsible, etc. I will admit, those of us who cover Mizzou completely failed to ask him about this when we had a presser with him earlier this week. Completely slipped, I think, all of our collective minds. He said his piece. I don't think he really was going to have anything to add. He claimed responsibility, and Mizzou won, so it is a fairly moot point. On to Wednesday. The build-up to this game was remarkable. I said during the pregame radio show that it was the kind of game for me personally where I woke up before my alarm on Wednesday, which really never happens, because it was just ready for it. And I don't even play. I just write and then yap about these games. That's all I do. And I was excited for it. It had that feeling. Like I said, I think that translated to the crowd. And then certainly it translated to the players. Mizzou, like I said, scored 32 seconds in and then scored the first 12 points of the ball game. They went up 12-0. Nate Oates had to call a timeout, I think, far earlier than he was expecting. Probably didn't want to call one before the first media timeout. And that, of course, just a crowd that was already crazy to start the game only got crazier then. And that start was actually worth a lot because it built the margin that Mizzou held on to. Mizzou won the game by 12 points. And of course, it's not an exact science, right? But 12 will run you in by 12. I think there's something to this. And part of it is that 12-0 run by reaching double digits became what people in the analytics space call a kill shot, which is a very aggressive sounding name for a basketball phenomenon, but it sort of fits, I guess. A kill shot in the analytics folks' eyes is a 10-0 run. Of course, it can be greater, but any run that hits 10-0 or greater in a basketball game. And they love it as a predictive metric because, as this game showed and as other games showed, as the Georgia game showed, right? 15-0 run counts as a kill shot in the second half of that game, too. Those sort of prolonged sequences can really get it done for you in any given game. They can win it, they can seal it, they can swing a game in your favor or cause it to break in your favor. That's what happened for Mizzou against Georgia. It was back and forth until it wasn't. Or they can lose it if you give one up there. Mizzou in Texas A&M, I'd have to check for sure, but I feel like they traded kill shots in that game, and those were big deals there. And now, why I bring this up, this is something big picture to look at with this team. These kill shots are really championed by a guy named Evan Miakawa, who's an analytics guy out there, pretty well liked and trusted in college basketball spaces. I believe he is one of the first people to suggest UConn might not be all that this year. I think he got in some beef with Coach Two Rings, and I guess the analytics were probably right on that one. But he tracks these and likes it as a predictive metric for what teams can do in the postseason, given that any given kill shot might not mean a whole lot in a big picture season-long sense, but it can win you a game, and that's what postseason is about. It's just about stringing together individual wins and not losing, and how many kill shots you create versus concede is part of that. So he tracks these on his website, and I decided to pull the numbers. I saw he'd put out a graph that had me interested here, and then after seeing these runs play out in the last couple of games, I decided to pull the numbers. So Missouri has recorded 25 kill shots this year. Again, 25 times the Tigers have gone on a run that is 10-0 or better in a game. So that comes out to 0.96 per game. They've played 26 games at this point, I think. Yeah, 26 games at this point. 25 kill shots. So just a hair under one per game, which again tracks. I'm sure some of you can think of these sequences coming in other games this season. There have, of course, been more than two dozen of them. So 25 kill shots or 0.96 per game puts Mizzou tied for the 11th most in the country already a good thing, given that there are more than 300 teams in this metric. To be 11th is very good. The only SEC teams ahead of Mizzou are Texas, which is interesting, Auburn, which makes sense, they're very good, and then and the Mizzou is tied with Texas A&M at that 0.96 mark. That is good company to keep. I guess Texas, you know, in the bottom to middle part of the SEC, but in general, there are some good offenses there. But here's where it really becomes great, this metric in my eyes. Mizzou produces a lot of these, but they just do not give them up. Mizzou has given up 4 kill shots all season. 26 games, only 4 times has an opponent scored 10 or more consecutive points against Missouri. Mizzou will have games where it has scoring droughts. There was a stretch there sort of early in SEC play where I think we were concerned and talking about it on the podcast. I remember asking Dennis Gates and the players about it, about some of these offensive lulls during games. And those happen, you know, they happen to even good offenses have stretches where they don't make a shot or don't get a point, etc. But Mizzou was not giving up a whole lot in those sequences, 4 kill shots. That is 0.15 per game, if you want to do the math. And that is tied for the 4th fewest in the country. Liberty, Cincinnati, and Utah State are the only ones higher, which tells you that Mizzou is the best high major team or power conference or whatever you want to call it, certainly best SEC team in terms of not giving these up. So when you look at Mizzou being 11th in producing these and 4th in not conceding these, you can make an argument that Mizzou is the most efficient team in the kill shot category. Certainly, there's no other team that that gives up that few that gets that many, or gets that many that gives up that few, however you want to shake it out. It's like the Caleb Grill volume thing of, like, there are very few players who shoot as many threes as he does, that make as many as he does, etc.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Mizzou very well positioned in this. And again, you can say, well, why does that matter, right? There are other things that I would consider more valuable to who wins a game. And yes, absolutely, this is not an all-encompassing stat. It's not intended to be. It's not as if every March Madness game is just first team to put together a kill shot wins, and that's that. But it does matter. The analytics people will tell you there's a correlation. There's a reason they value this. Even this is something that maybe a little less formally or kind of metrically, that's not the word I'm thinking of, but this is something that Mizzou keeps track of internally. They're consistently, when they're playing defense, going for just what they call kills, which is 3 stops in a row. Other programs have other names for that, but a lot of these teams, that's what they're mentality-wise trying to string together. They get 1 stop and they say, all right, let's get to 2. Okay, let's get to 3. Boom, we've done something by getting 3 consecutive stops. And of course, 3 stops, 3 possessions, those offensive possessions. It's tough to score 10 points off 3 possessions. You'd have to get a foul on a 3-pointer or something in there. But you can see where this phenomenon is very widely accepted. I guess in that sense, they'd be more looking at like 6-8-0 runs. So a 10-0 run is a big deal here, because that generally is taking 4-5 possessions, maybe even more like 6 or 7 to play out. And again, why does it matter? Wednesday and Saturday, frankly, are the examples. Saturday against Georgia, that was the game breaker in the second half, or when the game broke in Mizzou's favor. Against Alabama, this game, the score was 12-0 when Alabama started actually playing and making shots. The Crimson Tide have a fantastic offense. Mark Sears scored 35 points. They shot 54% from the field, 42% from 3. That was even higher. In the first half, they were 60% from the field, 50% from 3, 86% from the free throw line, yet they trailed by 13 points. Why? Because Mizzou scored the first 12 of the game. That became the line of scrimmage, so to speak, when it came to the score line here. You assume in any basketball game, there will be swings of several points either way. If just one team scores on a couple of possessions while the other team doesn't, right? There are going to be swings. There are runs, you know, smaller runs that don't reach kill shot status. Alabama's biggest run or largest run in this game was 6-0. That's normal. Like you're going to see 6-0 runs in basketball games. That's the sport. But those came after Mizzou already had a 12-0 lead. So Mizzou's lead swelled to as much as 20. Alabama came as close as 6. But because that the line of scrimmage, the midpoint, so to speak, if they're playing tug of war, like the mud pit in the middle, was a 12-0 Mizzou lead. So sometimes it swelled bigger than that for the Tigers. Sometimes the tide crept in. But because the line of scrimmage was established there, Alabama never really had a chance. They tried. Mark Sears hit some shots there. They were very good at you know, it. If you were someone who like me has heard about Alabama as this crazy fast-paced offense but hasn't necessarily seen it in action a whole lot, it was remarkable to me the quickness with which they would in transition funnel the ball into a corner three, that the players there are just well drilled to run to that spot and look for that shot, look for that shooter and knock it down. They had some great late shot clock offense as well. But the line of scrimmage was 12-0. It was going to take a kill shot, frankly, from Alabama to get back into that game. That did not materialize, which is a credit to Mizzou's defense. And they won the game. Now, of course, not all of these kill shots are going to come to start the game, right? The Georgia one came in the second half. They could come at any point. But that's what one of these can do for you. I think it's a big deal. I think it's something to watch. Probably something I'll write about as we get into March here, just because it does, you know, it is a metric that a lot of folks like when it comes to March Madness and filling out their brackets. They like to look at those charts. We'll keep an eye on it, but want to make all of you aware of that as you're watching this team. Other takeaways from this game: Mark Mitchell, career high 31 points, right after he set a career high last Wednesday. He likes playing on Wednesdays, I guess. He had 25 as his career high against Oklahoma, 31 against the Crimson Tide. He was feasting down low, but he produced at the free throw line, 8 for 12 at the stripe. He drew 8 fouls is what I'm seeing in the stats. 8 fouls drawn by Mark Mitchell. Caleb Grill had 25 points and 10 rebounds, and man, some of those boards were clutch in the second half there when Alabama was just getting beat to rebounds and loose balls by the guard. That was something that Nate Oates seemed frustrated by in his brief news conference after the game. He was saying, you know, we should not get out-rebounded by a guard, but they did. And Caleb Grill's a good rebounder. That's not, you know, maybe that's sort of a knock on him. He's a very good and capable rebounder, but there was certainly an aggression to the way he played. He had a pretty sweet behind-the-back pass to Mark Mitchell that made SportsCenter, I believe it was the number 5 top play this morning on SportsCenter. And I wrote today about the adjustments that duo in particular, Mark Mitchell and Caleb Grill, that they are making. You're seeing Caleb Grill get hounded off ball. He recognizes this too. I asked him about it this week, and he says he's being grabbed and tugged and held and all these things that weren't happening earlier in the season. That's now the treatment he gets off ball. But you're seeing him cut and relocate and not just move around the floor, but do so with an intensity and in a deliberate fashion. Some of the angles he takes, even that behind the back pass he hit, he made a really just well-timed cut to get himself a step on his defender coming downhill for Tony Perkins to hit him, and then had the composure to hit the behind the back. But that's really compelling. Mark Mitchell said that he went through a stretch where other teams had adjusted to him and some of his downhill drives, and he had to find the counters, given that he has outings of 25 and 31 points in the last 3 games. I would say he is figuring that out. Somebody else, Ant Robinson, like I said, broke his slump over the weekend. Trent Pierce seems to be working his way out of his slump as well. He was, I would argue, the best player on the floor during Mizzou's 12-0 run to start this game against Alabama. He finished 3 for 5 with 6 rebounds, 8 points, and 5 assists, and 2 steals. Really strong outing from him. He was 1 for 5 at the free throw line, which was a concern for Mizzou in this game. They were 31 for 47 at the stripe. That comes out to 66%. I keep thinking that one of these games, the free throw shooting, is going to bite Mizzou in the butt and cost them a game. It hasn't really happened yet. I thought this might have been the one sitting there, to be honest with you, as the clock was winding down there and Alabama had turned to intentionally fouling a little early. It seemed like, all right, is this where it becomes costly? It wasn't. I don't know how much you can really improve or tinker with the free throw shooting at this point in the season. You know, ideally, right, you just don't have Trent Pierce go 1 for 5. Ideally, you don't have Ant Robinson go 0 for 2. You know, ideally, maybe Tony Perkins isn't 6 for 8. Maybe he's 7 for 8. All you really need is 3 or 4 more makes per game, and suddenly it becomes respectable. It doesn't need to be great. You just, you know, Alabama was at 71% free throw shooting. If Mizzou could get there, that would be ideal for them, I think. And it only takes a few more makes per game. Perhaps that shows up in March. Perhaps it becomes costly in March. We will see. At the end of the game, Dennis Gates asked fans, Mizzou fans, not to storm the court. He called the timeout with 1.5 seconds on the clock to ask that. Mizzou fans complied. I asked him why in the presser, and he brought up a few things. One, he wanted to save the $500,000 that Mizzou would have had to pay Alabama as a fine levied by the SEC. He wanted to use that for NIL. Fair point. That's a good chunk of change. That is more than a few players' salaries, right? $500,000 is a good amount of money when the rev sharing cap is going to be in the low 20 millions. He also brought up player safety, wanting to make sure they're safe there. That's why when he did encourage fans to rush the court against Kansas, he called that timeout again to let Bill Self and the Jayhawks leave the floor. But I also, he didn't articulate this when I asked him this, but I wonder how much there is an element of him thinking, and frankly, some Mizzou fans thinking this is a game they should have won. They were the KenPom favorite by a point. They, of course, won by more than that on your home floor. Alabama's a very good team, right? Not disputing that. But, you know, this is a game that if Mizzou is what we think they are, and they certainly seem to be, then, yeah, they should have won this game. Maybe they won it by more than I think was expected, even by people who were optimistic about the Tigers' chances, but probably not the sort of game you need to storm the court for. And then after the lack of a court storming, the craziness in Mizzou Arena was not over. Nate Oates came to the press conference podium, got about 2 minutes into his opening statement, and then the fire alarm starts going off in Mizzou Arena. Turns out it looks like there was a small fire very quickly, if not almost immediately, extinguished up in one of the suites there. Didn't see the fire going, but there was certainly a layer of smoke in the arena. The sprinklers were going off in there, and some staff was already grabbing mops and stuff to clean that up. Would imagine there's certainly some, you know, water damage to the suites there, but nobody injured. No, in my unprofessional opinion, massive damage or anything like that. Women's basketball game still scheduled to go ahead Thursday as planned. So perhaps a crisis averted there, but not something you see every day coming out of the press conference to hear evacuation orders over the PA system and see a layer of smoke in the arena. They're of course glad everyone was okay there. Fans were out of the building by that point. It was really just some team personnel, reporters, and employees who clean up the arena after games who were there. So seems like that was fairly well kept under control, though definitely something like I said, you don't see. I want to take the back end of this episode to do a little look around the SEC and the path forward from here. Because I wrote about this week, and I think it's really interesting how this can shake out for Mizzou between now and the end of the regular season. So the way things stand in the SEC, every team has 5 games left to go between now and the end of the regular season. 13 games played for everyone. All the bye weeks, the idle weeks, I think are done. Certainly are at the top half of the table. 5 games to go. Here's how the standings currently shake out. Auburn, number 1 in the SEC standings. They are 12-1 in conference play. Florida sits at number 2 at 10-3. Alabama is also 10-3. Florida gets the 2 spot over Alabama based on the fact that Florida beat Auburn while Alabama lost to Auburn. So the record against a common opponent there comes into play as that tiebreaker. Texas A&M is number 4 at 9-4. Mizzou is also 9-4. but Texas A&M is ahead because they have a head-to-head win over Mizzou, beat the Tigers in Columbia a couple weeks ago. Tennessee is number 6. Ole Miss is number 7. Both those teams are 8-4. Tennessee's ahead of Ole Miss because they beat Missouri, but Ole Miss lost to Missouri. That's the tiebreaker there. Kentucky is in 8th place at 7-6. Mississippi State is in 9th at 7-6. Wildcats ahead of the Bulldogs because they beat the Bulldogs. Head-to-head record there. It's my understanding that those tiebreakers are accurate. I found a site that is programmed to give you the standings with the tiebreakers folded in. The SEC website is not that site. Be careful there. I don't know if ESPN is either. I'm hoping that's right. There at least was explanation on the site of why a given team is ahead of another. It doesn't super matter at this point in time because, like I said, there are still 5 games to go. The race, of course, is for one of those top 4 spots because those come with a double bye in the SEC tournament. If you finish in the top 4 in the regular season, you enter the SEC tournament bracket in the quarterfinals. You become one of the last 8 there. The bracket is set up so it's the first 8, or the bottom 8, excuse me, play each other, then the next 4 enter, and then the next 4 enter in the quarterfinals. Dennis Gates this week declared getting the double bye as a goal for this program, for this team. So this isn't just me pointing this out setting this as the benchmark. I worry sometimes that we're moving the goalposts on this Mizzou team sometimes as they get better and better. This isn't me doing that. This is the benchmark. To me, it seems like there are 7 teams in the mix here. Auburn, Florida, Alabama, Texas A&M, Mizzou, Tennessee, and Ole Miss. They all have 8 wins or more. Kentucky, Mississippi State, of course, could conceivably get there, but I've been operating under the assumption that it's probably going to be one of those top 7 that get there. Auburn, I suppose, hasn't quite locked this up, but will pretty soon here. You know, they can get there. What's really interesting and key to Mizzou specifically in the race for one of these top 4 spots, if you look at these top 7, between now and the end of the regular season, all of them play 3 games against other teams in the top 7, except for one team. So I want to outline this. So you take Auburn, for example. They have 3 games against other top 7 teams. They play Ole Miss, Texas A&M, and Alabama. Alabama has Tennessee, Florida, and Auburn. Texas A&M has Tennessee, Florida, and Auburn. Florida has Texas A&M, Alabama, Ole Miss. I won't go through. I made a spreadsheet. I wrote about this. You can see a spreadsheet. I bolded it and highlighted. I think it's very fun to look at. Love a good spreadsheet. You can see this there. But the one team that doesn't face 3 teams in the top 7, and frankly doesn't face any team in the top 7 from here on out, is Mizzou. They played Alabama and beat Alabama, who is a top 7 team. But Mizzou has Arkansas, not in the top 7. South Carolina has yet to win a game. At Vanderbilt, not top 7. At Oklahoma, not top 7. Home against Kentucky, Kentucky is number 8. So Mizzou doesn't just have no games against top 7 teams. They have only one game between now and the end of the regular season against a team in the top 9, or top 8, I guess. And that is the regular season finale against Kentucky. So there are, we can overcomplicate this a little bit, that's what I'm going to do here because I can. And again, I like this math stuff. I like the spreadsheet. It's fun and it's interesting, and it's a nice little race for the top 4 here. Because of these games within the top 7 group, there's going to be shakeup there. It's like a pennant race in baseball. That's how you make up ground. You want to gain a game on a team, beat that team. Those teams will do that. There are 9 losses, at least, that have to be divvied up between these top 7 teams, or top 7 minus Mizzou, because Mizzou isn't part of this fray. Mizzou's out of this. There are 9 losses just from those games against each other, right? That's not counting if, say, Florida loses at Georgia, or Ole Miss loses to Oklahoma, or something like that, right? Of course that can happen. That's this league. Upsets happen. There are just at minimum 9 losses that will be incurred by those other 6 teams. Mizzou doesn't have to take a single one of those. The Tigers could win out and not play a game in the regular season against a top 7 team and improve their stock. They could theoretically get to 14 wins, and who knows what that would be. Certainly a double bye, potentially an even higher seed. Now, again, that requires Mizzou taking care of business, including in Fayetteville on Saturday against an Arkansas team that, if it isn't there yet, certainly is close to being desperate. But there's a path here for something special in the SEC tournament. We talk a lot about the ceiling of this team being something to do with the NCAA tournament, which is valid and fair, and I think that the norm, right, of saying, you know, well, hey, like I said at the start of the show, like maybe this is a team that has Final Four potential, right? You know, maybe this is a team that should be playing in the second weekend of the tournament. All those things are fair. We talked about the kill shots of what translates well into March, right? But I also am starting to really wonder what is possible out of the SEC tournament, right? And how much weight or meaning or significance should be assigned to that. Mizzou has demonstrated, you look at these standings, right? Mizzou lost pretty handily to Auburn, number one team in the league, on the road. Maybe this is rose-colored goggles, but I think if right now, or say in a few weeks when the SEC tournament kicks off, if you put Mizzou and Auburn against each other on a neutral court, I think Mizzou has a chance. I'm not saying Mizzou wins that game. Auburn would be favored in that game, and they've been fantastic. Jahni Broome is in my eyes, the best player in college basketball this season who isn't named Cooper Flagg. But I think Mizzou has a chance there, right? Mizzou beat Florida, the number two team in the conference, in Gainesville. They beat the number three team, Alabama, on Wednesday. The number four team, Texas A&M, stylistically, they stuck with Texas A&M. That came down to the final two possessions. Mizzou lost to Tennessee because Tennessee shot, 66.6% from three? Mizzou beat Ole Miss at home. Mizzou beat Mississippi State by 27 on the road. They haven't played Kentucky yet. Gets to do that at the regular season finale. Those are your top nine teams, the other top eight. Mizzou has demonstrated that it certainly can compete with or beat any of them. Again, anything can happen on neutral floors, tournament settings, et cetera. There's no home court advantage at, Bridgestone Arena out there in Nashville? I should know. I walked by it out there for the Music City Bowl. Something's possible in the SEC tournament, too. We'll see what that looks like. Getting a double bye certainly eases the path to that. I think Mizzou absolutely has a chance here solely because the Tigers can focus on picking up five more wins between now and the end of the regular season, maximizing those opportunities while watching some of the other teams just incur losses through the simple fact that they play other top seven teams and somebody has to win and somebody has to lose every game. The SEC remains 500 as a conference in conference play. One of the all-time best stats. I hope that has you excited. Like I started off the show with that, and I really hope it is exciting. I'm not telling anybody how to be a fan. You can have gripes with this team. Dennis Gates doesn't think they've played their best basketball. Caleb Grill and Mark Mitchell were happy to kind of walk us through what they think can be better in the aftermath of last game. Free throws are certainly one. Some of the defensive execution against Alabama as well. They were unhappy with giving up 98 points to Alabama. I say that's respectable. They weren't happy with it. But by and large, the fact that nobody saw this season coming, that you're going from winless in the SEC to talking about, hey, can this team contend in the SEC tournament? Heck of a turnaround. I hope everybody is enjoying it appropriately. It's supposed to be fun, sports. That's the show. Hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for taking the time to listen to us. As always, you can, of course, find our episodes online at stltoday.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your episodes, and wherever you do tune in. We do appreciate it if you rate, review, like, subscribe, and do all of the different actions you can do to support your favorite podcast. The coverage of this team does not stop over at stltoday.com and inside your St. Louis Post-Dispatch. I'll be down in Fayetteville this weekend, excited to check out a game at Bud Walton Arena. We'll be on the road for the game at Oklahoma, for the SEC tournament, of course, whatever March Madness looks like for this team. We're carrying you all the way. It's a fun ride, and we're glad you're here with us following along. Thanks again for listening. Enjoy watching Missouri Tiger basketball, and have a great rest of your week.